Our next guest is head of a blog on the Democratic side or left side, in the same way the Sound Politics tends to be on the conservative or Republican side. And that's David Goldstein, who's at horsesass.org. And David, thanks for being with us this morning.
Thanks for having me back on.
You bet. Well, we want to get some perspective on developments leading up to the governor's race, and some other thoughts on local politics as well. And I've got let me ask you this question first off. If I were the Democrats, I would, and if I were confident in my case before Judge Bridges, I would simply sit back and let Dino Rossi hang himself, because I would believe that if Dino cannot make this case and the Republicans cannot make this case, and after putting the state through this for 6 months, they are taking a serious chance on self-inflicting a great amount of harm in terms of the political arena. And if I were the Democrats, I'd sit back and let them do that. And yet this week, we've had the Democrats come out and say, well, we did the recount, and she really won by 67. And Gary Locke gets up and says, I really think Dino should concede. And I'm confused, so I don't know if you're confused as well, or if you could give me some perspective on why the Democrats would do anything except let Dino hang himself.
Well, you know, I wrote on this subject the other day in response to some supposition on Sound Politics about Gary Locke's motive. And I pointed out that Gary Locke is, let's just say the word I use, that there's turtles who are more likely to stick their necks out than Governor Locke.
Mm-hmm.
So to think
that
somehow this was Locke being afraid that the case wasn't going well and he had to do something, I think is a tremendous misreading. What I look at it is a combination of gloating on the part of the Democrats, they're so confident, and also the fact that they honestly believe that they win even on the data, even if they use the Republicans' proportional deduction methodology.
Mm-hmm.
But that may not be how they win in court. So they might not ever get the chance to make the case publicly that, hey, even if you count up all the illegal votes, Gregoire won. So they're making that case now.
Because it would seem to me what they're really doing is contributing to the perception that this election was really screwed up.
I don't think so.
You know what I mean?
But I think what I look at it as a more aggressive PR move on their part in terms of coming out with this data ahead of the election.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if you read, I know a lot of people saw the headlines coming out of the hearing, and it sounded like it was a victory for Dino Rossi. But if you actually read the transcript, there was nothing for the Rossi camp to cheer about. Even the one ruling that supposedly went their way, which was the headline said that the judge accepted the proportional deduction methodology.
Right.
That's not what the judge said. If you read the ruling, he said, and this is a quote, the denial of this motion should not be interpreted
right.
as a pretrial ruling adopting the statistical analysis methodology.
Right. Well, what he said was, what the judge said was, I understand you can try and present it to me, but it doesn't mean I'm going to accept it.
Right, and I think this is a very important point of law here. Because what this judge has been very careful about all the time, and he's been very aware of it, and he's spoken about it in his rulings, is that this case is going to be appealed to the Supreme Court. And like any judge, he doesn't want his ruling overturned. So
right.
he's been very careful in putting together what will be a virtually appeal-proof decision. And on this point, particularly, what he's done is he's not going to say, to deny proportional deduction, to say you can never use it. That would be a point of law. What he is going to do is look at the evidence and say, yeah, in this particular case, we really can't use it. And that's an evidentiary finding. And it's very hard for the court to overturn an evidentiary finding
right.
because the Supreme Court doesn't really hear evidence.
Now, let me ask also with this aspect of Gerlach speaking out. Some people have suggested it might have pushed the edge of ethics because apparently Gary Locke works for the same firm that is representing or partially representing Dino Rossi and the Republicans in court.
Well, when you say some people, you mean Stefan. That's the only person who I saw raise that issue. I mean, Stefan can't seem to question somebody's motives without also suggesting that there was some criminal or unethical intent on their part. It's silly to believe that Gary Locke went and snuck a look at the Republican case And
no, no, I don't know. I don't think no. That would not be my. That's not what I would say. My concern would be simply that as a member of the firm, I would not suggest he had to look at any of the records or anything or the files or the case. But my suggestion would be just because the law firm is representing the Republicans as a member of the law firm, I would think there would be some. It may not be ethics, but there may be some business etiquette that would suggest that as a member of that firm, he not say anything because the firm is representing the other side.
Well, you know, clearly he spoke out as the former Democratic governor,
right,
not as a partner in this law firm. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know what the specific ethics are involved in these things.
But see, that would be, I know, that would be like I'm speaking as a real estate appraiser rather than a talk show host, because I used to be one.
Well, or I'd suggest when we get to discuss the gas tax.
Oh, we will. That's next.
I think there's a question about the way KVI is essentially sponsoring an initiative between you and John.
Let's talk about that.
Okay. We'll talk about the gas tax. Here's my suggestion, Kirby.
Yes.
I think, since we're talking about ethics,
uh-huh,
that if you qualify this for the ballot,
uh-huh,
and it looks like you've got a good shot considering the money you're raising and interest you have.
Which is totally shocking. By the way, overwhelming. I did not expect that response, but go ahead.
It's still tough to gather that many signatures in such a short amount of time, but with enough money you can do anything in the initiative process. Tim Iman has shown that. So I think that you and John, come the end of June, early July, when you hand in those signatures, if you've got the number, you and John should follow Dave Ross's lead, as he did last year when he officially filed to run for Congress, and you should take a leave of absence from your jobs at KVI, and I very graciously offer to fill in for you through November.
But David, I want a show to come back to. No response. What happened? I appreciate the thought. Here is where we stand so everybody understands. John and I are assisting. We have no official capacity. I'm not an officer, director, chairman, and I in no way am above and beyond a financial contribution on my part and talking about it on the air. And we're going to invite debate. I mean, this is going to be the great forum. My interest in this really is I think it's time for a great debate on transportation policy. And we're going to be devoting as much of our time on the air to opponents, you and Doug McDonald, other people, or Bill Finkbeiner, as much as we can, because we want the great debate. And that's one of the reasons why I got interested in the campaign, because I don't think that debate was had on transportation policy. And I have some problems with this gas tax. So am I out every night collecting signatures? No. Am I meeting in smoke-filled rooms dictating policy? No. That's all been handed off to other people. Are we talking about it? Yes, we are. And what do I gain? What do I stand to gain from it? Maybe, I don't know, $200 a year if it passes. But I'm hoping that we get a change in transportation policy in the state.
Right. And I don't want to spend too much time on this issue.
I understand.
But on this part of the issue.
Yeah.
I'd rather talk about the gas tax itself.
Right.
But this initiative would be nowhere without you and John. You're using this enormous platform you have to promote it, to get it off the ground, and you'll continue to promote it throughout the summer. And I wouldn't be surprised if you saw a PDC complaint asking that all this free airtime be declared as an in-kind donation. And I hope KVI's accountants are ready to put all that together.
And that may be possible. We have talked with our lawyers, and we know the boundaries, and we're prepared to deal with that should that happen.
Because most initiatives do not get this. You know, Iman is very special in that he gets all this attention for, you know, every time he sneezes.
Right.
But most other initiatives die for lack of coverage, some very good ones. Now, I'm not a big fan of the initiative process in general.
Right.
But this initiative has this huge advantage in that you have you and John promoting it. And John, of course, has a history of successfully supporting initiatives. So he's experienced at this.
Right. Much more so than I am.
You know, it's not quite an even footing. Personally, and I was talking to somebody else, another liberal blogger about this the other day, and he disagrees with me. I kind of hope you get on the ballot because I think it will fail.
And I'm willing to take that chance.
And I think it will fail for a number of reasons, not the least of which being that the people of the state want the money spent on a lot of these projects. There's a lot of people who really want this money spent, Plus, I think you're going to have some actual industry business money spent to get the message out.
Oh, no question. It happened in R51 as well. You know, R51, John and I worked against that as well, and big business wanted R51 passed, and you will notice, as far as I know, last time I talked to the person collecting the money for no new gas tax, there weren't any big corporate checks in the coffers.
Well, we'll see once the PDC filing comes
through. Yeah, and I would suspect big business, especially companies that pour concrete, especially construction companies, transportation planners like, obviously would spend a lot of money. Same thing happened in R51. But I think when R51 failed, it was when it was defeated, I think it's a reflection that I don't think the governor's made its case for transportation policy. And my concern, David, is this, all right? Look, I know 520 needs to be replaced at some point in time. I just don't know what we're replacing it with in this plan. I've seen no plans. I know the viaduct at some point needs to be replaced, but what are we going to replace it with? Is it a tunnel or above ground? I don't see that, and yet the legislature just gave them $2 billion to build something. We don't know what's going to be built. And then I look at Sound Transit, and I look at commuter rail. And even the most inflamed advocate of commuter rail and mass transit has to look at the Everett Sounder commuter train, which we've been talking about for a couple of days, and realize that it is a disaster. It is a waste of resources. We only have a limited number of money to spend, limited amount of money to spend to solve our transportation problems. And I would like to see some of the people on the transportation side, you, I'd like to see Doug McDonald, I'd like to see someone in the legislature, stand up and say, wait a minute, we can't afford to waste money on this anymore.
Okay, but I think when you bring in rail, I think it's a bit of a red herring in this particular debate. Because the vast majority of this money is spent on roads.
$800 million well, goes to rail.
And some of it's out of $8.5 billion.
Correct.
And I want to raise a point about R51. You're not going to get votes from people like me.
Right.
Like,
I know.
Like you got on R51.
I agree.
I voted against that not because I didn't want to spend money on transportation,
right,
but because I didn't like the package, and more
exactly.
So, I objected to the fact that the legislature punted and put it before the voters. I wanted the legislature to decide.
The defeat of R51 was a coalition between people who were concerned about the way it was done, like you were, and people who were concerned about the projects and the money and it not being used wisely. I mean, there was a whole coalition of people from left and right who voted no on R51.
And I think that this gas tax was very different. I hear John Carlson attacking the legislature that you vote for this initiative, it's giving the finger to those evil politicians in Olympia. Well, this got bipartisan support.
Yes, it did.
This was a package that was deliberated the way legislation should be, and they responsibly went on the record and voted for it.
But, David, even you have to look at the people who voted yes and no and understand there were trade-offs in this.
Well, but there's trade-offs in all legislation.
But these trade-offs were political in nature in the sense that they allowed certain suburban Democrats to secure their seats by voting no on a package you know they really wanted to vote yes on. You know Hans Dunshee and Tracy Eide and Rosemary McAuliffe supported this bill. But they went into caucus and said, well, gee, if we can find enough Republicans to vote yes, then you can vote no.
That,
you know that, don't you?
That is the nature of a legislature. But when I look at comparing it to, do we want this whole deliberative process with all of its flaws and all of its compromises, or do we want somebody like Tim Iming going off into his bonus room and writing an initiative all by himself for an up or down vote? Well, I choose the legislature almost every time.
Do you trust the people, though?
Well, I do trust the people, and that's why I think if the money is spent to get the message out so that this is balanced, so it's not just KVI promoting this and maybe a few pamphlets coming in my mailbox on the other side, I think if people are educated on what this gas tax does, and also what an excise tax is. Do I have a minute to address that?
About 30 seconds, because
okay.
We're up against the clock.
This is an excise tax, not a sales tax. It'll be 37.5 cents a gallon total. 5 years ago, the gas tax was 23 cents a gallon.
Correct.
When gas costs a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
So we were paying 23 cents on every dollar. And now today at 28 cents, it's about 11 cents. If the price of gas doesn't go up, and we're all projecting it will, we're talking about 14.4 cents for every dollar you spend on gas. With an excise tax, it has to be raised over time or else the money in real dollars decreases. That is simple math. It is eaten away by inflation. Mm-hmm. So this is actually...
But that's also balanced by growth, though, is it not?
Well, but the growth also makes more demands on the system.
It can.
The more miles you drive on the roads, the quicker they need to be repaired.
What's the average commute in the Puget Sound area?
Oh, I don't have that in front of me.
And there are other things we can do. And listen, we'll continue the debate. We'll have you back on, and we'll go over some of those issues because you raise some valid issues, but I think there are valid issues on the other side. And I do appreciate the amount of power that you credit us with. I really do. I don't think we're that powerful, but I appreciate it. I like to think we are.
Well, if I had my own radio show, maybe I could get an initiative fast.
Well, Air America's down the street. They're looking for local talent.
Well, you call them up and recommend me.
David, I would be on your resume. If you apply, I will recommend you.
Okay, I'll take you up on it.
All right, take me up on it, all right?
Okay.
David, we'll have you on again. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.